Kernel set in real 3. Could you do this rear link definition for me again, please?
Now then, if we consider for the brigade level, there was there was one frequency for communication between brigade and battalion, and another frequency for communication between battalion headquarters and companies. There might even be, and occasionally was, a further break at company level. That is to say, if the battalion was operating on company nets, there would be one frequency for communication between battalion and company, and another frequency within each company. Now, at each break-in frequency, there would have to be a rear link tank for communication upwards to the higher level, so that the, for example, brigade commander could not normally talk directly to the battalion commander in his tank, but he had to operate through what was called a rear link tank, where an officer was in communication with the brigadier on his net, on the brigade net, and the problem that arose was this break between the brigade net and the battalion net, the fact that the brigadier could not normally speak direct to the battalion commander unless the battalion commander was called to the rear link tank to speak directly.
I see. Would it be fair to call this rear link tank a sort of command tank, or does that have another meaning?
No, not a command tank. A rear link tank is the only means we had for communicating between brigade and battalion, and it was an indirect means of communication, not directly between brigadier and the battalion commander.
Oh, I see. The command tanks would have a different meaning, would
command
they?
Command tank was the tank from which a command was exercised downwards.
And that could be at battalion or brigade level?
At battalion or brigade level.
Good. Were there any other elements within the communications setup where wireless was employed? I'm thinking of things like your administrative support.
Now, the administrative element of the battalion, which was referred to as its B echelon, which was responsible for keeping the battalion provided with food and ammunition and fuel, and also with charged batteries, should they be required. This was a subunit of the battalion, which normally was left behind when the battalion went into battle or out on an exercise, and had to be able to be summoned by wireless when it was required.
I see.
And we maintained a link to the B echelon by wireless.
Right. Well, let's get down to the summer training season. Could we start off at the smallest unit and work up to the bigger ones? The training at company level, what was involved in training company personnel once you joined the battalion?
Well, it was done initially at short range, probably on the barrack square. First, with all the tanks stationary, and subsequently carrying out drill maneuvers in a limited area on a company basis.
Mm-hmm. Is there any more to say?
I think that really covers it. This was the... You said, what was the initial stage, and this was it.
Yes, but presumably you were also training individual members of tank crews in the operation of equipment.
Oh yes.
Could
well,
we develop
of course, we
it
had to
that?
Have classes for teaching the procedure, the radio telephony procedure, and also the Morse code to the tank corps personnel. The radio telephony procedure, I think we have dealt with. This was laid down and regularized and had to be correctly used, and this had to be taught first in the classroom and then on the job There was also, of course, the Morse training, which had to be and was regularly carried on throughout the training season until the standard was high enough. And the standard we aimed at was 6 words per minute, not a very high standard, but it was enough for the purpose.
Could you contrast that with the standard you would expect of your own signals?
Well, an operator class 1 was expected to communicate at 18 words per minute, and the best ones could go faster than that.
Yes. You did actually allude to radio telephony procedures before, but you didn't actually describe them.
Well, I didn't describe them. One had to, first of all, affect get in communication, I suppose. One would call up, and one would, if one was, for example, Ajax was the code name of my A company in my battalion, and I would call up and I would say, "Hello, Ajax, are you receiving me? Over." Ajax would then reply, "Receiving you strength 9 and clear. Over." And I would say, "Hello, Ajax, I am receiving you loud and clear. Off to you." Then I would call up Brutus, my B company. And I would go through the same rigmarole. That was I've forgotten what the word was we used for, anyway, effecting communication or getting in communication. Well, then when it came to passing messages, the same kind of thing, I would call up and I would say, "Hello, Ajax," and pass my message. And at the end of my message, I would say, "Over." He would then reply and say, I've forgotten what my own code name was, strangely enough. But anyway, he would call me by my code name and say, "Hello, so-and-so, your message received. Out." No, we didn't say out of those things. Off, we used to say. One said over when one expected to reply and off when one had finished the conversation. There were things like map codes. Let me see now. I'm trying to think of any other formal messages. Well, I can't remember. I once wrote out all this procedure and there was quite a fair bit of it.
Not to worry.
But I can't really remember in detail. I'm sorry.
Was there anything else attached to the company training phase once you had joined the battalion?
From the signals point of view? No, I think the main thing was training and the tank corps personnel in manipulating and operating the sets. And as I described in the case of individual training of the signal personnel, this was a matter which took a good deal of effort and time, because the manipulative skill and the trained ear took a bit of time to achieve.
There's a lot of, I don't know whether scathing is the right word, but for lack of a better one, there's a surprising amount of rather scathing comment in the Tank Corps history of hobos' dissatisfaction with Tank Corps personnel's adaptability as far as wireless was concerned. I wonder, in your training of individual crew members, you found any sort of resistance or lack of aptitude to wireless which might reflect hobo's complaints?
Well, hobo was a perfectionist and he demanded a very high standard. You see, when you're dealing with a large net with a large number of wireless sets on it, it had to be operating had to be very slick indeed. The response had to be immediate. And you had to say the right thing quickly and get done with it. Even verbal communication between individuals spaced out at a distance needs a little bit of drill and a bit of experience before it can be conducted quickly and efficiently. I think this is probably what Hobo was talking about. One had the manipulative job as well as the responding to his command and the acknowledgement of his order. One had the it was a bigger problem than just standing up and shouting at each other. And he demanded an immediate response. And if you didn't get it, there was trouble.
Well, once company training had been completed, how did you develop training at battalion level?
Again, this was conducted in a small area to start with, and more or less as a drill, with first of all with stationary tanks, and then subsequently drill movements were carried out under the orders of the battalion commander.
Fine. During this period, 30 to 34, when you were intimately involved with brigade exercises, what proportion of total battalion communications were given by wireless?
Now then, at short range, for reasons which are now obvious but were not really appreciated at the time, at short range, visual signaling with hand and arm signals were used whenever they could be. They were quicker, it was immediately obvious from the hand acknowledgement that the order had been received and understood and was then carried out. This was always used when it could be used. When visual signaling for reasons of distance or any other reason, or in order for training purposes, wireless was used instead. Wireless was it had to be used when visual signaling failed, naturally, and of course it had to be practiced a good deal at short distances in order to raise the standards sufficiently to be able to operate it at the greater distances.
I suppose I could put the question another way by saying what proportion of battalion training was in fact done at such ranges where visual signals were possible?
Once the standard drill had been practiced sufficiently and the standard required had been achieved, then distances were widened out up to the maximum possible limit, where wireless was the only means.
And provided you were within visual distance of each other, all of the training would be conducted by visual means?
Yes, I think it is fair to say that. But of course, if wireless was used for a company which is out of sight for a short time, possibly passing behind a wood, and wireless in operation, the nearer company within visual range would naturally have to come in on it, because a command given to the whole battalion would have to be acknowledged by everybody concerned.
There's one form of visual signal you haven't mentioned so far. Perhaps you could put that in its context as well, namely flags.
Flags were not used in the as a means of communication within the battalion. They were used to indicate things like anti-tank guns for drill purposes, which was a blue and white flag pretending to be an anti-tank gun, but for signaling they were not used.
Did you do any night exercises?
Oh yes, but as tanks, a tank battalion could not be effectively maneuvered on a dark night. This was not really an exercise which could be carried out effectively. One, of course, did have to, for example, on Salted Plain, towards the end of the training season, go out at night in order to attack an objective at dawn. And one could find oneself crossing Salted Plain in a very murky light. But not on a dark night. I don't think the tanks really were effective. They could hardly be driven with obstacles around on a dark night across country.
When you move from battalion exercises to brigade exercises, was it just the same thing but on a larger scale, or did you have to develop new procedures and try out exercises in order to develop those procedures?
No, I think that the brigade commander had to assume that his battalion, the standard of communications within the battalion was good enough to enable a brigade to be maneuvered. And therefore there was no difference, really. Of course, ranges tended to be greater at brigade level from brigade to battalion. But the maximum range possible with the MBMC was rather limited. Of course, it was possible for the brigade commander's headquarters to be stationary in and put up more sections of aerial and thereby increase the range a bit. But communication beyond 2 or 3 miles was dicey.
Yes. Of course, the brigade exercises came very much under Hobo's personal charge. And last time we talked, you described him as a genius who really understood wireless. When you said that, did you mean that he was able to appreciate its possibilities and therefore developed exercises and new schemes which were original as opposed to standard practice?
Communication-wise, I think no. I think he was thinking really in terms of the tactics of an armored brigade. And I think that he had to stretch communications to their limit in order to achieve this tactical performance. I think he just took it for granted that communications had to work. Of course, he understood that we were limited by range, and this was one of the limits within which he had to operate. But I don't think there was any essential difference.
Okay. Right. Let's get on to the subject which I know is of primary interest to you and with which you were closely involved, namely the sort of problems which you faced during those years and the kind of solutions which you tried in order to overcome them. I've sort of listed the problems that you mentioned to me last time so that we could kind of deal with them one by one. Now, one of the problems you mentioned was the difficulty of ensuring that all sets were on the proper frequency. Why was that a problem?
Well, now, if I may continue to assume that there were 50 sets in the battalion, well, it doesn't matter, really. However many sets there were, one had to be sure that they were precisely on the same radio frequency, because if that was not so, if one or two outstations were not correctly tuned to the same frequency, they would not hear what was being said from battalion headquarters to the for example, to the company commanders. It was vital, therefore, that every set should be able to hear every other set. For example, if one set was off tune, it could easily come on the air and interrupt a message which was being going on between or a conversation going on between two other tanks. If they were all not on precisely the same frequency, chaos ensued, necessarily.
But why was it a problem keeping them on the right frequency?
Well, now, these sets were supposed to be designed with their crystal control to ensure that every set was precisely on its frequency. But in those days, due to inaccuracies of crystals or incorrect tuning of the sets, it was often the case that a set could go off frequency or even not ever be correctly tuned to the battalion frequency initially. And my first job when the battalion was to go on an exercise was to make sure that every tank was correctly tuned to its frequency. This had to be done initially with every single tank that was equipped with wireless. And one had, I, in point of fact, used to stand in my turret, in the commanding officer's tank, and indicate by hand signals if a frequency adjustment was necessary by moving my hand up for raising frequency or down for reducing the frequency, until, in my judgment, and with the limited aids I had to check by the meter readings on the sets, that each tank was identically on the same frequency. But this took a fair bit of time, and with 50 sets, it took upwards of an hour to achieve.
Were you able to do anything, or did you try to do anything, to eradicate this problem of sets not being properly tuned?
Well, now, it became clear to me very early on that this was a major problem for two reasons. First, for the reason I've described, that unless every tank was on the identical frequency, you could have chaos because failure by the odd tank If a tank, as I said, but if one set was off frequency, then it wouldn't hear what was going on in the rest of the battalion and could chip in and interrupt, or else it wouldn't get its orders. It's quite clear, I think, that this is the first essential. Every tank on the same frequency. Now, where am I?
That was one of the problems. Yep. You were going to say there was another problem. I think you're leading on to the problem of delay.
Now, the other problem was this. Because it took so very long to get this netting completed, to my satisfaction, and taking about an hour to do it, if an enemy should happen to be listening to this, the enemy would be able to would have plenty of time to discover by listening all about the communication system, the number of tanks, the number of wireless sets, the frequency, of course, the individual voices of operators in individual tanks, means of identification, the whole security of the communication system within the battalion would be disclosed to the enemy if he had the sense to listen in during this netting period. This, to me, appeared to be a very grave danger.
Did, in fact, battalions listen in to others?
Well, I used to make a point of listening to other battalions.
Was it widely done?
I think I was probably the worst offender, I suspect, because I was, I think, more alive to this danger than my colleagues at the time. I'd quite possible done to people did the same.
As if you're having a competitive exercise against another battalions. Seems rather obvious kind of thing to do, to just sort of listen in to people's...
Well, of course, looking back with hindsight, it's glaringly obvious. Mm. But it was not, I don't think, fully appreciated at the time what a grave danger this was.
So what kind of solution did you try to seek to overcome this problem of delay?
Well, I think I shall have to reiterate this story slightly. The first thing I did, having taken deep thought on the subject, was to build a little, I think you might say really, a little receiver, which I would carry from tank to tank, or could be... No, I didn't carry it from tank to tank at all. I carry this myself. And I placed it on top of the tank, the commanding officer's tank, when I was carrying out the netting procedure. Now then, what I did was this. I called up, say, Ajax, for example, in order to make contact with him. I would order him to transmit. I would pick him up on my little receiver, as well as on the tank receiver. I would then switch on the master. I would then switch on the transmitter of my own installation, and I would hear, if the other tank was somewhere near the frequency, I would hear in my separate little receiver a beat note between the incoming signal from the distant station and my own transmitter. I then had an indication that the other set, if I could hear this beat note, an indication that he was off tune. I would then signal to him to either increase or decrease his frequency until the beat note in my little receiver disappeared. I would then have accurate information that the frequency was correct. I would then carry out the same procedure with the other tanks and ensure by this means that the whole battalion was absolutely correctly netted. And this was the only method so far by which this precision of netting could be achieved, and I was very pleased with the result.
What was the scale of the improvement in terms of the time taken for netting once you'd introduced this?
Well, it speeded it up to some extent, but one still had to get onto every single tank and go through the procedure. But one had at least the satisfaction of knowing when one had finished one tank that it was right, and without it, of course, one might very well have to go back to stations which one had already dealt with, because the accuracy was not the degree of accuracy was quite impossible without the aid of my little special receiver.
I see. Were you able to take this line of experiment any farther than this?
Well, yes. It occurred to me, in a flash really, I think, that it would not really be necessary for me to have a separate receiver to do this knitting, because there was available for me the receiver, which was part of the installation. In order to make this step forward, I had to make a modification to my set. In point of fact, I used a number one set to experiment with because it was easier to modify. What I did was this. I made arrangements to be able to switch on the master oscillator of my transmitter without the power amplifier, and to switch on this master oscillator while I was listening on the receiver. By arranging a very slight amount of coupling between the master oscillator of my transmitter and my receiver, this enabled me to pick up the signal in my receiver from my own master oscillator. Now, having done that, if I called an outstation and ordered him to transmit without speaking, so that I could receive the continuous wave signal from his transmitter, that is the unmodulated carrier from his transmitter, I could then beat the incoming signal from the outstation against the signal from my master oscillator in my own receiver. I could then adjust the master oscillator of my receiver until the beat note disappeared, and I then knew that my master oscillator was tuned exactly to the frequency of the incoming signal. Now then, this, of course, was not precisely what I needed to net the whole battalion. In order to net the battalion, if every set in the battalion was modified in the way that I had suggested, it should be possible for every outstation to adjust his master oscillator to the carrier signal from my transmitter, and furthermore it should be possible for every outstation to do this simultaneously. If this were done, then the whole battalion could be netted to the correct frequency in a matter of moments without any use of radio telephony, and therefore without any risk of giving away information to the enemy. Now, I could only modify one set, and what is more, in so doing, I was probably contravening the regulations. I therefore wrote this suggestion up and put it to my superior officer, who was interested and sent it forward to the War Office. It's strangely as it seemed to me, the War Office didn't seem to react at all. It is to me now, looking back, a matter of amazement that the War Office failed to grasp the importance of this step forward in technique, and the elimination of the security risk due to netting. And also, of course, the possibilities which followed on from this modification, which would one of which would be to enable any station which for one reason or another was not on the net but wished to communicate onto the net to join it simply by listening to the transmissions on the net, carrying out the operation of beating the master oscillator to the signal radiated within the net, and then being in a position to communicate on this net. The possibilities of this, not only within the tank battalion, but in general, one would have thought would have been clear to any alert mind, for example, in the Air Force, even in the Navy. It seemed to me that this was a vital method to introduce for wireless communication in general. But Although the matter was, I believe, referred both to the Admiralty and to the Air Ministry, I was eventually advised that the higher authorities were not particularly interested. I then thought myself, now, I was not...